The Hard Shoulder with Kieran Cuddihy.
With the MG Hybrid and Electric range.
On News Talk.
Now, Ger Gilroy from Off the Ball. Join me to look ahead to the weekend sporting action, though we might talk about a legal ruling today, Ger. This is to do with Lassana Diarra. So what is it? What was decided?
Well, you're the lawyer here, so when I step out of line, you better correct me.
I will, absolutely.
This is a... look, the details of the case are essentially he ended up in Russia, moved from one Russian club to another, fell out of favour with the management team, and stopped coming to training for unspecified reasons. The club disputed the fact that he was injured. He said he was. They sacked him and then they sued him to try and get the 20 million transfer fee back. He lost that case. And okay, fair enough, whatever. There was no sense of him repaying that money. He then wanted to play football again. A team in Belgium, Charleroi, tried to sign him and they were about to sign him, but then they believed that they might end up being liable for the 20 million that was he was on the hook for. At which point he's like, well, that's not fair. And they're like, well, we don't care. Nothing to do with us. So he sues and the players' union sue and they go all the way to the European Court of Justice. The European Court of Justice today have ruled that certain parts of the rules that football use are restrictive and against European Union rules. That's my understanding of it.
Yeah, so that is mine. So effectively, a lot of the time in players' contracts, there are clauses written in whereby the players are restricted in terms of breaking the contract, and that there's financial penalties that accrue therein. And what they've said is that that actually flies in the face of one of the fundamental freedoms of the European Union, which is free movement of peoples and free movement of workers as well. So that's kind of the long and the short of it. And it's not that, and my understanding kind of from a legal point of view, it's not that kind of restrictions on that being an absolute right are not illegal per se. You know what I mean? A gardening leave clause in a contract, for example. Like that's a restraint of trade clause that prevents you being able to kind of leave one company and make a living for another.
Yeah.
But a gardening leave, say if you were to leave this company, Ger, and go to work in another media company, there'd be a period of gardening leave that, I don't know, you might have to observe. If the gardening leave clause written into your contract was a 5-year term, that would fall foul of one of those fundamental principles.
Yeah. My understanding was that all the gardening leave stuff is either up for discussion or had been passed recently, where Europe was like, no, this is not going to work anymore. And then I think maybe in Britain there was something about the city, because it's a fairly common thing for bankers. So I don't know what the status of that is. Did not expect to be talking about that. But
my point is, I guess, whether the kind of the rules around gardening leave changes, there can be some kind of restrictions, you know. Notice period is a perfect example. Is that probably the easiest example?
Yeah,
you can't just walk out of the building. You have to give them 2 weeks' notice.
And in sport, there is also, in Europe, there has already been a derogation. Because if you think back to, originally, the first case is the Bosman ruling, where a player believed that at the end of his contract he should be free to sign for anybody. And that was a massive sea change in how football worked. One of the lawyers involved in that case is actually the lead lawyer in this case. And he's making noise that this is a similar size. I'm not quite convinced, because in the court ruling, they do also say that actually they understand that for competition in sport, you don't have to have the same sets of rules. In America, for example, the NFL is actually a cartel. And generally, America's been pretty good at getting rid of cartels up to, you know, relatively recently. But they allow that one because they recognise the sport has to have different rules. Otherwise, you won't have competition. And up to this point, Europe has been like, no, sport, you can't have different rules. But it feels like they're kind of going, maybe we went a bit too far on that.
Yeah.
We'll see.
Because if this is taken kind of to one natural conclusion of this is that, you know, there'd be no transfer deadline days or none of that anymore. People would just be able to kind of, sorry, Eric Ten Hag, I'm giving you 2 weeks' notice and then I'm moving to Chelsea.
Yeah, and I wonder if it also means that there will be no value in trading the contract, because you don't trade the player, you trade the right to exercise that player's activities. And that's the value. It's why, as the contract comes down, the value of the players decreases. It's why Chelsea are giving out 7-year contracts. And I don't know if this ruling is actually going to be the massive sea change. One of the things they're talking about is collective bargaining, where the players would all argue together on behalf of themselves. So there would be minimum salaries for certain age groups and there would be all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
You'll see where that goes.
All right. Anyway, so it's all up in the air as to the application of this, but it's an interesting one. Nonetheless,
before we're all getting rich.
Well, that's not only the main thing. It's actually the most important thing.
Yeah.
Let's be honest about that. It's the most important thing.
Keep that up.
Pardon?
Why did you give that up?
Yeah, I often think, as I was sitting on the bus home to Kilkenny the other night, the thought crossed my mind, sure. Anyway, Manchester United, I mentioned Erik ten Hag. God, they were awful against Spurs, weren't they?
Yeah, and required a late equaliser from Harry Maguire to draw against Porto.
To save face.
Yeah, and they've got Villa at the weekend. So I actually think that they might beat Villa.
Do you think so?
I just think that there's an After the Lord Mayor show for Villa. Like, that's the biggest thing that's happened in Birmingham in 40 years. And now, there's two caveats to this. One is last season Villa beat Man City and then the next week beat Arsenal. So there is a recent being able to put performances back to back. But Man United actually beat them twice last year and played quite well in one of the games and were a bit spawny in the other game. So I wouldn't be terribly surprised, because the international break is coming up. So next week we'll all be complaining about how bad Ireland are once again.
I look forward to it.
And we can talk about that and the cruel and unusual punishment it is to be an Ireland football fan at the moment. But with Manchester United, frequently what happens is just before it gets to the absolute point where they have to sack him, a performance comes and they're like, oh yeah, actually, you know, there's something here. He's
like the FA Cup is the prime example.
Exactly. Yeah. Now, they did try and get rid of him after that, but they just couldn't find anybody to do the job. And we are entering that weird phase where Sir Ruud van Nistelrooy has joined the staff and everybody's like, well, you have to give it to him now because he's on the staff, which means he basically has to do it. You know, like, it's a gun against the head of other good managers around the world who are like, will I come in here and take this job and have my reputation tarnished? Because no one's really gone on after Manchester United since Ferguson and had a brilliant career and used it as a stepping stone to greatness. They've had okay careers. You know, Van Gaal probably did restore his reputation somewhat with the Dutch at the World Cup. Moyes has recovered somewhat from the absolute. Mourinho was never the same again, really, afterwards. And Ole Gunnar Solskjaer is not working. So, like, what would Erik ten Hag's next job be? And who comes in afterwards that goes, yeah, this is great. I'm the person to fix this. So we'll see.
Munster, they were also abject last weekend.
Yeah. That was a really interesting performance because I don't know if you saw the scenes afterwards, but Zebre were celebrating like they'd won the whole league. So that's how big and unusual and surprising a victory it was for them. And they were way, way off it at halftime. Like, Zebre weren't great in that first half, but came out in the second half and threw the ball around and were really, it wasn't just throwing the ball around, were very structured in how they took apart the Munster defence and scored great tries. And then afterwards on the telly, O'Callaghan calls him embarrassing, and during the week, Dennis Leamy goes, yeah, I went home and watched everything he said and he was 100% correct.
Yeah.
Now, I wonder if he was also texting going, would you shut up please? Or was he like, thanks for that? It'll be interesting to see what the dynamic in their WhatsApp was like. And the other thing I think is that they got pretty lucky that Ireland beat the All Blacks in the Black Ferns, rather, in the women's...
No, that sucked up all the oxygen in the room, in the rugby room, yeah.
On Monday, everybody was talking about that as opposed
to...
So what's his contractual situation? Is he the right man for the job? Are these the right players? Did that all the talent that they lost over the summer, is that the thing that's changed this? So it'll be very interesting to see what happens here. Like, they have a long, this group of players have a track record of the last couple of seasons of being completely streaky. They go on losing streaks and then they go on winning streaks. And they rescued the end of last season and the season before by great sequences of victories. But when they're in bad form, it's been difficult for them to get out.
Yeah.
So we'll just see. Now, there's a few players that'll come back in. And the emerging Ireland team who played really well on Wednesday had some Munster superstars of the future on that side. So I wouldn't say that Munster are in a bad situation, but Rowntree's really got to get a grip of it. And whatever pressure Leo Cullen feels this year, I have no doubt that Rowntree feels even more pronounced because, you know, short patience amongst the Munster fans.
Before you go, because we were talking about it last weekend, the race for the title, League of Ireland and Shells and Rovers on Sunday.
Shells and Rovers on Sunday is very interesting now because obviously Rovers did a brilliant job last night in getting a point despite being a man down. The performance that Shells put in was abject when they were 2-0 down against St Pat's, was brilliant to get it back to 2-2, and then they lost an absolute cracker against Stephen Kenny's Pats last week. And, you know, there is a chance that this is a draw, which might continue to bring Pats back into it. Now, it would be like the greatest comeback in the history of sport if they were to win it. But I think it would be great if it was a draw, because then there would be more talk of Galway could still win it. Derry obviously can still win it. And all of a sudden, while people are saying the quality isn't great, the depth is suddenly much better than we thought it was in the league. And that's what you want.
Well, you're talking about, if this is a draw, you're talking about five teams.
And, which is ridiculous, right? You thought it was going to be a procession for Shamrock Rovers. They have the biggest budget, the most experience, they've got the strongest depth of squad, and they have a manager who knows how to get this thing done. So, but they are going to be distracted by the fact that they have big European games coming week after week for the next 4 weeks.
Sure, you're right from off the ball. Thank you very much.
The Hard Shoulder with Kieran Cuddihy.
With the MG Hybrid and Electric range.
Weekdays from 4 on News Talk.